Many years ago, I was invited to come to a sales meeting with one of our new salespeople who had been well trained on all our products. We had done everything that we thought we needed to do. And I sat there quietly in observation mode, observing him sell. And as he began to sell, it became very clear that he didn't know what he was selling at all. And so when I came back to the office, I went to the sales manager and I said, you know, has so-and-so been trained? I said, yeah, he's been trained. He's been on all the training. I said, you know, did he participate? Yes, he participated. And the question was, like, what's wrong? I said, not only does it seem like he doesn't know what we do, I mean, he was saying things that were so factually incorrect. I can forgive subtle mistakes, but it was so incorrect, he was actually making false statements. And if the client had bought based on those false statements, it would have been like a problem. Not only couldn't we deliver what he was talking about, but I didn't actually understand half of what he was talking about. So that incident was, for us at Raise Corp, was a big moment where I realized that it's all very well that somebody's sitting in the training and that the training might be really, really good, but we have to assess how much of that training they understood. Did they really understand what was being trained?
As you were listening there, you probably heard Alon put a little bit of emphasis on the observation that he was participating in. And if you don't know what he's talking about, that's because you probably were listening but weren't really listening to the previous episodes where we were speaking about being trained, you know, the techniques of training. And then, of course, the next episode, it was a double whammy where we spoke about the content that you're training on. And so in this moment, that's a little bit of self-reflection. Maybe let's rather call it self-assessment, because that's what we're talking about in this particular episode. You need to assess your team that you are building.
Exactly. And what I see with many businesses is actually they don't want to have that moment with their team. There's a weird psychology about assessing somebody. There's a psychology on both sides, I suppose. There's a psychology of being assessed. It feels like going back to school where somebody's testing your retention. And the other side is, of course, you don't want to be the teacher. You want to have a good relationship with the people that you're working with. And if you're assessing them, then there's the possibility that they would get a bad score and then you have to do something. So it feels like more work and it feels very teacherish. So a lot of businesses just avoid it completely.
But the downside, of course, is also if you want to avoid that pain, you're going to be sitting in an observation and your salesperson is going to be selling a product that isn't what you actually sell to your story at the beginning.
Or even worse is if they're asked a question, they cannot answer the question.
And if you're wondering whose story this is, that's the voice of Alon Reyes, CEO of Raise Corp. And in this series, we are talking building a sales team in an entrepreneurial business. Of course, Alon and his team at Raise Corp have assisted thousands upon thousands of entrepreneurs to build their businesses through the Raise Corp process. And now we get an opportunity to pick his brain in this series. So Alon, we're now sitting in this position where we are uncomfortable. We don't really want to have this strained relationship, as you were referring to earlier. Maybe we also don't want to make our new appointment feel uncomfortable and put a spotlight on them by putting them in an exam kind of situation. So how do you manage this? What process do you use to do your assessments?
Well, you touched on it earlier when you spoke about the listeners self-assessing. So that's actually how you start with self-assessment. And you do that in a subtle way where you are doing open book quizzes. So the first process in the assessment process is an open book environment where you provide the salesperson with all the material that you're going to assess them on and you create open book assessments. And they need to be multiple choice, open-ended questions, and they need to go and discover the information for themselves through either asking other people or in documentation or watching things, whatever the case may be. Every single one of our sales team has got at least 15 quizzes to complete before they even start the proper assessment, the closed book assessment.
Wow, 15.
Yeah.
And how many questions per quiz, more or less?
20.
Okay.
One might be 100. Okay. And there'll be simple questions, like, you know, name the three colors that this comes in, you know, or something like that. And they can go and look at the product sheet and see it comes in red, blue, and green. And they can write that in there. So that's sort of getting them familiar with the information. And of course, in the quizzes, in the open book quizzes, you're still assessing, you're still scoring them, and there's still a minimum of 80% pass mark. Now, what I think is very important is that if somebody doesn't get the 80%, that you take that seriously at that point, because that's a very strong indicator up front that they're not going to make it through the assessment. If given an open book environment, an environment where they can ask anyone the answer and they can go through the process of discovering the answer and then simply documenting the answer, and they haven't achieved 80%, it's a great indicator that you've made a mistake in your choice of a salesperson.
What I love about an open book assessment where you either have to go into material or you have to go to a different department or whatever the case might be, we've chatted about this in previous episodes, is by sheer force of the process, it's a second, third, fourth exposure to the information. And so retention should just emerge very naturally as a result of all of this as well. So it's not just an assessment, it's also just more exposure to the information.
I take that very seriously. Lower than 80% is, for me, a great proxy for somebody who's not going to make it.
So you've got 15 to 20 open book, so to speak, assessments before doing a closed book big assessment. It's called the final exam.
Mm-hmm.
What period of time are you assessing over? So this is not crammed into 1 week. This is a number of weeks, a couple of months. We've spoken about a probationary period. Is this the period within which this assessment is occurring?
Yep. So Flowcode methodology says up to speed in 90 days, so that you're trying to get somebody functional, completely functional in 90 days, that you're not having that embarrassing situation where they are asked the question, what colors does it come in? And they go pink, yellow, and purple, and it's red, blue, and green, or something worse, where they're promising things that we cannot deliver on. So that time period is 90 days. So those quizzes happen in a staged way. Some quizzes might require something beforehand before that quiz is released. So some are sequenced, some are just without any sequence, can come in at any point. But most of the quizzes happen in the first 60 days of their up to speed in 90 days, the first 100 days in Raise Corp, in a Flowcode organization. And you are trying to get them from week two. So week one, you might release one or two. And from week two, you start to release a few more. And you just try and release them in a way that you're not overwhelming them, because they're still probably getting trained, trying to get used to concepts, words, understand the product, the environment.
Yeah, you're talking about internal language. Yeah, in
exactly. They're going through quite a huge amount of information that they are trying to absorb. And so if you give them all 15 or 20 quizzes up front, I think that's a bad idea. So releasing them in a thoughtful way is important, and thinking through the sequence of release is also important. And so it's also important there that the opening quiz is 200 questions. You're going to scare the living daylights out of the individual. So also be thoughtful about also the types of quizzes that you're releasing, rather smaller ones where they start to build a little bit of confidence. What's very important here is that within 48 hours or 2 working days that you give them feedback. Their feedback.
Mm.
And even more important, as I said earlier, is to identify those that get below 80% and then go through the quiz with them and see where they've got it wrong.
As you say, a 200-question quiz, that sounds like quite a beast.
Yeah, we actually call it the monster. And we've got another one that's called the dragon.
Also, you know, 200 yeah, questions.
Also 200 questions.
Wow.
And but we give them, we don't ask them to do that in a week. We ask them to do it in 2 weeks. They've got 2 weeks to complete that.
Okay, interesting. So what you aren't doing is you're not forcing them into a classroom environment or into their office or into a cubicle and saying you've got 30 minutes to complete this. It's actually something that they can complete over a period of time.
Yeah, each quiz has got a time limit to it. Normally days, they are issued it and they get between 1 day and 2 weeks to complete. If the monster would, they'd get 2 weeks to complete. If you really want to get them to concentrate on a big piece, it might be a week for a big quiz. So you need to be thoughtful in terms of the timing as well, and also be diligent in collecting the information back. I see a big mistake that many entrepreneurs who follow this process make is that they release the quiz but are not disciplined to collect the information on time. And so you're also signaling to your new employee that you're not too fussed about discipline yourself,
mm-hmm.
and sending the wrong cultural signal to that individual.
The final assessment, what does that look like though? So that's closed book. I can't imagine you releasing people for 2 weeks. That must be something where you sit for 6 hours in a day or something, surely.
Yeah, in our environment, it's normally 2 hours. It's a 2-hour assessment. There's major study groups for it. You do that with any class of employee in a flow code organization, of which Race Corp is one. So you will ensure that at the end of the 90 days, so in towards, let's call it day 80, you are having an assessment which is 2 to 3 hours, closed book and invigilated. So especially today with technology where they can, you know, have stuff on their computers, etc., you have a closed book environment where you...
Is this a paper exam?
We've got it in both formats, on paper and digital. And so if you don't have it in a digital environment, you can just do it in the old-fashioned way on an exam pad.
It raises some interesting questions for me around someone that's really quick, how to invigilate. But anyway, that's a whole nother... That's going to be per organization.
Yeah, so the invigilation... It really takes place that they sit in a room, they issue the questionnaire, and somebody sits there, does their work, and makes sure that they don't speak with one another. And it's timed. It's an old-fashioned exam. It really is. It's quite unremarkable. You know, it's just an exam. But what we find is that those exams are taken seriously, that they study for them, that if people come in groups, in other words, there are 3 or 4 salespeople coming in at one time, they'll form a study group. I've seen often that there'll be morning study groups when I arrive in the morning at 7 at work. They'll be sitting, 3 of them, you know, studying and asking each other questions before the assessment,
mm-hmm.
take it quite seriously. And then it becomes cultural. What did you get for the monster? And so the other salespeople, you know, it's like a coming of age, you know, it's a stage of becoming a proper salesperson. Oh, you've got the big assessment. And of course that leads to the question around, well, what's in the assessment?
And what I love about it is that there's this camaraderie that can develop, and I'm sure across departments that they are also seeing people walk in and say, oh, good luck with that. I know that's coming up. That kind of thing must be happening as well, which is which is lovely.
And that becomes cultural. And so everyone in the organization knows that everyone else is being assessed and everyone's taking their job seriously. You know, often what I see with organizations that do training is that people come for the training and most often they're just coming for the day of doing no work and coming for the lunch and the social of it. And there's no real test to see whether you've understood the work or you have taken the time to try and understand what you are being paid to do. So it changes the culture to a more serious culture, a more deliberate culture.
Well, I think about when a group of MBAs get together. You know, they all know when they walk through the door that everyone else in the room has the MBA. They've all gone through the process. They've all sweat. They've all bled. They've all cried. Not all. Some will have got divorced, perhaps even during that period, just because of how stressful and difficult it is. And so there's this qualification criteria. There's this raising of the bar, and people like that. You know, people respect that. I appreciate how what this can do in the minds of the right person is signal to them that this is an organization that does take you as an employee seriously. You're not just in and out, in and out. It's not just a revolving door.
The way that I think about it is that if I were a pilot and there was an open book exam and I passed it, yeah, I would, as a passenger, go, okay, now maybe he was a good investigator. He or she, you know, gleaned all the right information. But I want to know that that pilot passed the exam and knew what to do.
In the moment of emergency.
Yeah. If the landing gear didn't come out.
Yeah, you don't want them to be looking through a manual.
Exactly.
Trying to figure it out.
And the same thing with a doctor or a surgeon. And if you think about that in your business, you think about the fact that a good person in a role will do a great job and a bad person in a role will do a really bad job, which has the potential to kill your business, your department, your culture, your whatever. If you have that sort of lens on that individual in your organization, it changes your relationship with their requirement to have the deep knowledge of their role.
Is this kind of thing communicated up front with them to set a tone with them, or is that left up to the department or the head of department to determine?
In our environment, we do that because we deal with people's lives in the sense that we support businesses who are struggling to scale. So if we do a great job, they scale, lives change, people get employed. So we take it seriously from that perspective. But I don't know if everyone in a flowcode environment is doing that. But it's a good point. They should. And maybe we'll write that into the manual as well now.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Thanks for that feedback.
And speaking about writing into a manual, we haven't spoken about content. Let's touch on that for just a second. What are you being quizzed on here?
So, of course, when we spoke about this in the previous podcast around training, we spoke about training on a company, industry, department, and role.
In that order.
In that order. So we're assessing on all those things. So there's a general quiz for everyone, for the company. For the industry, it'll be specifically for salespeople, that they need to know about industry, whereas in other departments, they don't need to understand the industry really. Not all. So some departments will also get industry quizzes, but most of the departments, like finance, won't need to know about the industry. Then, of course, the department will be specific to that department, and then role will be specific to that role, and will be the science and art that's split there as well.
Okay, science and art, yeah.
Yeah, so we're the source of the quizzes lies is in the documentation around all that stuff. So if we're at company level, it might be the company profile. So you'd give them a company profile, open book quiz on the company profile. In the assessment, you're taking a complete view of all those four areas, the company, industry, department, and role, and you're creating a 100 or 200 question assessment. Could be 50, but no, ours are between 100 and 200. And some questions are, you know, answer yes or no, and some questions are in 100 words or less, describe, or in your own words, describe. Some of our examiners are tricky, and some of them don't. I leave that up to the people who set the exams. So
when you say people, are you talking about department heads?
Yeah, department heads are responsible for setting the exams. So if they've been with us for a long time, they probably would have set the exams. If they're new heads of department, they will get the right to change the exam after a year. They can't do it immediately. So after a year in that role, they will get the right to change the exam. And it's important to allow an exam to be, or an assessment to be changed and a quiz to be changed, because it has to be updated all the time as the organization evolves. Products change, processes change, the environment changes, the company changes. So you can't have a quiz or an assessment that comes from 5 or 10 years ago. It will most likely be outdated. And so what often happens when we are in a growth stage is that one of the people in our Opal team will turn around and say, we've got to get that in the exam and the quizzes, because we're seeing that we're experiencing a problem of understanding in a certain area, and we use the quiz and the assessment as a way to reinforce the knowledge around that particular area. So a very important part of quizzes and assessments is that they evolve. And a very important thing is that your HIDs have the, not just the right, but the requirement to evolve the quizzes and assessments.
I think my favorite part of this conversation has been the revelation that an assessment can be used to assist to define culture, embed culture, a culture of excellence, a culture of performance. Where at the very beginning of this conversation, I might have just had a very, well, it's not I might have, I did have a very almost negative view of assessment, because it does feel like you're taking me back 20 years to when I was sitting writing exams in school or university, and but there's so much more value here.
Yeah, we've had a huge amount of criticism over the years around this, especially from those who failed the assessments. And there's validity in the usefulness of assessments. But I haven't come across an academic environment where people aren't assessed. It's just the nature of when you're assessing knowledge, you have to assess it in some way. So either demonstrate it, or tell me about it, or explain it to me. And so that's an assessment of sorts. So, you know, you can get very technical in technical environments. I'd assume that in a pilot has got a very technical kind of assessment. A doctor has got a very technical kind of assessment. And in other environments, you might have a far less technical assessment. It might be more about, you know, explain your understanding of this. So what are your perceptions of this? Where it's a little bit open to interpretation, but you want to understand that people have gone through the process of trying to interpret it even in their way. So whatever your environment is, there still is a requirement for a point where you have to express your understanding and your interpretation of information.
Well, I know a number of doctors. I've got a number of pilots that are my friends, and they have to keep their licenses up to date. They have to show a continued understanding, a continued ability to execute in those environments. It doesn't matter if they've been in the industry for 2 years or whether they've been in the industry for 20, 30, 40 years. They still have to prove that they can, and they have to do it. So I think we should move beyond this idea that an assessment or an examination is meant for just young people who are at the beginning of a journey. A final question. How many people fail? If you were to average it out over the years that you've been doing this, how many people per group will not pass? What can our entrepreneur expect from a churn perspective?
I'd say around 10% is the right number. And the reason why that number is so low is because what's happening when you are interviewing people is you're telling them, listen, if you get this job, we take this very seriously. We're telling them up front, there's a huge amount of information. I'm going to assess you on it. Very few people will not join because of that, because they think, you're not really serious. What can it be? Then they arrive on day one and they get their first assessment or their first, no, sorry. Then they arrive on day one and they get their first quiz or first two quizzes. And they go, oh, they were serious. And then, you know, a week into it, they get a few more and then a few more. And then by the time you're talking about an assessment, they know you're serious. And they've already got the corridor talk, oh, you got your big assessment coming up, you know, and it's already in the, people are talking about it.
Yeah, the culture's kicked in.
The culture's kicked in, exactly. So a lot of people then at that point take that assessment very, very seriously and get ready for that exam, for that assessment. But there's another reason why the failure rate is so low, and that is if they fail, they get a second chance. And there is a second assessment. What we find is that people in more senior roles tend to have a much lower failure rate because they understand that they've walked into an environment they need to understand the information better than those people who are reporting into them. And there's a whole thing that, you know, I can't get 80%, just which is the pass mark, and you know, the people in my department have got 90 or 95. So there's a big pressure on them to do really, really well.
Just quickly, are results available to everyone to see?
No, but people share their results.
Mm.
Departments keep score. Oh, you know, Gareth has got the highest score ever.
Yeah. He's the GOAT.
He's the GOAT, yeah. Cultures do that. They'll say, Gareth got, you know, 99%.
Yeah.
And Gareth will be miffed about that 1%. So the culture will kick in. And so the failure rate is relatively low. But a question that you haven't asked, which I'll ask myself, is there seems like a lot of work alone. Is it really worth it? Well, Gareth, thanks for asking that question. It is, Gareth. It definitely is worth the effort. And so I see a huge amount of resistance to this thought pattern around doing quizzes and assessments because of the additional work it takes for the entrepreneur to set this up. Not only to set up the assessment, but initially in a small environment, they're the person who has to mark the quizzes. And, you know, that's more time. I have to write the assessment. I have to then mark the assessment. And my strong, strong point of view is that it's really, really worth it. It's worth the effort. It's worth the investment in putting that assessment together, those quizzes together. It takes me all of half an hour to put a quiz together now for a new product or a new division, you know, and I build it up I don't do it all at once. I build it up over time.
No, you build it up as you see new questions are being asked, as you were mentioning earlier.
Yeah.
You know, when we get a new product, I'll ensure that we include that in a quiz. I'll remove or add.
Sorry, this begs a question. When the new product comes in, is everyone assessed on that product across the organization?
Not everyone. The salespeople are. But that talks to a different process, which we might touch on later, which is the enrich. Enlighten is all about getting the person up to speed in the first 90 days. So if there's a new product, that will definitely come into the enlighten if it's in the time of that person's probationary period, those first 90 days. However, if somebody's been there for longer, there's an enrich process, which is the continual professional development that will probably land up in an enrich quiz or an enrich assessment at a later stage.
Well, thank you, Alan. I think this has been quite a meaty episode again. I was expecting a short, quick discussion about running exams, but it turned into something quite valuable. That's the voice of Lon Ray, CEO of Race Corp. And remember, if you want to stay updated with this podcast series or other podcast series like this, go to racecorp.com where you can sign up for notifications there or follow Race Corp on your favorite social media platforms where notifications will be released as well. I'm Gareth Armstrong, and this has been a Razor's Edge podcast. We'll see you in the next episode when we are discussing you need to manage them. See you then.